So how many of you are old enough to remember Polaroids? Remember the Polaroid camera? Remember you had to push a little button and all of a sudden, it kind of come out, the picture come out, and it wasn't clear. You had to go and shake it and then blow it. And then about, I don't know, a minute later, it seemed like it finally came in where you could see it and recognize it. Boy, those days are gone. Now we have the phones. And I was trying to remember if we ever took selfies with Polaroids. Did you ever turn your Polaroid around this way and do like this and take a picture of yourself? I can't remember. So surely we must have done something like that at some point in the Polaroid experience in those years, but I don't ever remember. I mean, we could have. I remember sending a bunch of youth kids out, I don't know, about 60 junior hires out all over the mall on a scavenger hunt. They had to take Polaroid cameras and take pictures of stuff they found, you know, and do it like that. But I don't remember anyone come back taking selfies of themselves, you know, and come back and say, oh, Pastor Lee, look at my selfie. You know, I think that must be a term that has come about since the cell phone era. Am I right? Since smartphones and iPhones and all that. So, okay, there we go. So that's kind of come out now in today's culture, in our world, that the selfies have really made impact. So why am I talking about that? Well, number one, just to get your attention, but also to let you know that, have you ever thought of this, that Jesus is really a selfie of God? Because it would be hard for us to know what God is like without Jesus. Because Jesus helps us understand who God is. Because God's a spirit. And how do you take a selfie of a spirit? Right? How do you get to know a spirit? You get to know God through Christ, through Jesus. Jesus put it this way. You've heard him say this, and you know it's in the Bible. He says, if you've seen the Father, you have seen me, right? In other words, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. That I'm the selfie for God, the Father. This is how you know God. We started a new series, and in this new series, we're going to be looking at the Gospel of John. And in the Gospel of John, John's one of his primary purposes of writing his book is to say that if you've seen Jesus, you've seen the Father. That Jesus is the Messiah. That he is the Son of God. That he is God himself. He wanted his readers to know Jesus. He wanted his readers to know who Jesus is and that he is the Almighty God. Matter of fact, in John chapter 20, verses 30 through 31, he states his purpose. And he says this, the disciples saw Jesus do many miraculous signs in addition to the ones recorded in this book. Because John only recorded 7 miracles. I'll talk about them in a second. But these are written, why? So that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have power, you will have life by the power in his name. John is telling us, man, I'm writing this book, and you got to catch it. You got to see. Jesus is not just a prophet. He's not just a friend of God. He's not just a family member of God. He is God. And I want you to see that Jesus is God. That you see, when you look at Jesus, you see the Father. Now, he goes into seven miracles. And we won't take time to look at these 7 miracles in this series. We may come back another time and preach the 7 miracles. But the first miracle, they all are only things that God himself could do. Like, no man could do any of these. The first one is turning water into wine in Canaan. No man could turn water into wine, right? The second one was healing a nobleman's son who was on his deathbed, who was dying. And Jesus spoke the word, and the man went back home, and his son was raised to life. Another was a lame man, a man who was by the pool of Bethesda, you remember? And he couldn't get in the water, and Jesus came by and prayed for him, and he was made whole, he was made well. Only God could do that miracle. Another was feeding 5,000 with 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. And that's just 5,000 men, the Bible says. There had to be children and women there. There could have been up to over 10 to 15,000 people. And you do it with just 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes. And then you had 12 basketfuls of bread left over. It's just a total miracle. Only God could do that. He walked on water. The miracle of Jesus coming to disciples walking on the water is something that only God himself could do. The healing of the man that was born blind. People who are born blind even today cannot get their sight back. We don't have the technology, if you're born blind, to be able to ever see. But Jesus touched his eyes and he saw. He touched his eyes, but remember, he made it with some clay by spitting in it and putting it over his eyes, and he was able to see. Jesus raised the dead, and the miracle that he told was the one when Jesus raised Lazarus back to life. Lazarus, come forth. And out came Lazarus from the grave, been buried 3 days. He stunk, he smelled, his body was decaying. He was all wrapped up, and here he comes walking out like this. And they unwrap it, and he's like, I'm alive! And they all go to his house and have a big party. And I wonder what Lazarus talked about at that party after being dead 3 days and coming back to life. What he saw and what he told. And they were all rejoicing together, but only God could bring someone dead back to life. He showed these 7 miracles, each one incredible, each one showing God's divine power, because he wanted you to know that he is God. So many times when Jesus would go places, people would say, would you please do miracles? Would you do miracles for us? And many times Jesus would do miracles, and when he did it, it was to demonstrate, I am God. Don't misunderstand who I am. But not only did he do it through his actions and his miracles, but he did it through his words and who he said he was or is. So in this next 7 weeks, we're just going to kind of give an overview today, but in this 7 weeks, we're going to look at the 7 statements that Jesus makes about himself. And I'm hoping that as we reveal more of God to each one of us, that we each one grow in trusting God more. Because Psalms 23, we looked at God's goodness, and God's goodness is there, and we looked at it so that hopefully you and I will relax and trust God more so we find the peace of God in our life. As we look at these 7 statements, they reveal more of God, and there are more reasons why we ought to trust God. Number 1, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. We'll look at that next week. I am the light of the world. I am the door or the gate. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. In those 7 statements, he is giving the name God out at the very beginning each and every time. Do you see it? Well, hold on, you will in a minute. We're going to see that Jesus calls himself the I Am. It happens in John chapter 8, beginning in verse 48. Now let me give you a background. Right before this, Jesus had been confronted by the Pharisees and the religious leaders, the Sadducees. They brought a woman who'd been caught in adultery, and Jesus kind of shamed them. by saying, you know, he without sin cast the first stone. And they all kind of looked down because they didn't want Jesus to reveal their sins. So they just kind of went down, oh, we got, you know, and just kind of made them so sparse. And they were gone. And now they've come back mad because in their minds, Jesus embarrassed them. And they want to show that, no, we're the Holy One and you're not. So they come back in verse 48. The people retorted, these are the religious leaders, "You Samaritan devil, didn't we say all along that you were possessed by a demon?" Imagine that. They're calling Jesus and telling him, "You are possessed by a demon." You would think at that point they wouldn't be standing anymore. But why is Jesus' love, truth, and grace in action? "No," Jesus said, "I have no demon in me. For I honor my Father, and you dishonor me." In other words, you dishonor me by saying that I have a demon inside of me. "And though I had no wish to glorify myself, God, the Father, in other words, is going to glorify me. He is the true judge." May that all be our attitude. It's not about us being glorified. It's always about God being glorified, right? Verse 51, "I tell you the truth, anyone who obeys my teachings will never die." Oh, this must have really got the Sadducees upset. Sadducees were different than the Pharisees. Sadducees did not believe in a resurrection. That's why they're sad, you see. Because when you die, to them, it's over, it's it. So they're sad, you see. So it must have been the Sadducees now at this point responding and said, "Now we know that you're possessed by a demon. Even Abraham and the prophets died. But you say anyone who obeys my teachings will never die? Are you greater than our father Abraham? He died, and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are?" Okay, I think that would probably be enough to cause them all to fall over dead. But Jesus answered, "If I want glory for myself, it doesn't count. But it's my Father who will glorify me. And you say, he is our God. But you don't even know him. I know him. And if I said otherwise, I'd be great as a liar as you are. But I do know him and obey him. And your father Abraham rejoiced as he looked forward to my coming. He saw it and was glad." The people said, "You are even 50 years old. How can you say you've seen Abraham?" Jesus answered, "I tell you the truth. Before Abraham was even born," notice this phrase, "I am. I am." At that point, they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus was hidden from them and left the temple. I can't imagine these men casting out all these accusations against Jesus when he is their creator, when he's the one who gave them life and breathed life into them, when he's the one who has been there for them or is there for them, who's came to die for them. The whole time they're throwing accusations, he would one day carry their sins to the cross. It would be his blood and his veins that would be shed for their sins. He's the one who holds this planet and everything in place. And yet they're nodding in agreement that, "Jesus, you must have a demon in you." I don't know. It's one thing to be insulted by people who don't even know you. Like, I can handle that pretty well. But when somebody knows you and they insult you, that's a whole nother level. And they should know him. They should hear his teachings and go, that's God. They should see the miracles and go, wow, that's God. And yet they just go on insulting him. But Jesus was in his game, and they couldn't get him off. He used self-control, and he spoke with truth and grace. I love how he just responded in verse 49, I have no demon in me. I imagine when Jesus said those words, the men looked and they knew the truth. Then Jesus says, for I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. You know when someone is slandering you and they've lost the argument, they go to childish behavior, to insults. That's what's happening here. They've lost the argument with Jesus, so all they can do is insult. But Jesus kept speaking the truth in love. Great example how we're responding this day and age. Because a lot of what's going on, people cannot, you know, they're insulting, they're resorting to insulting because they can't handle and deal with the truth. And we just continue speaking the truth in love, right? But verse 57, 58 is what we want to focus on. The people said, aren't you even 50 years old? How can you say you've seen Abraham? Jesus answered, I tell you the truth. Before Abraham was even born, I am. Jesus had enough, and it was time to end the conversation. Jesus knew what to say that would bring it to an end. And look how they responded. Verse 59, at that point they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus was hidden from them, and they left the temple. The word I am is actually a name. There's a theological term for it. It's called tetragrammaton, which means words without vowels. The I am in the Hebrew language has no vowels because they didn't want to speak the name of God out loud. Because they honored the name of God so much because of the Ten Commandments, honor your God, you honor the name of your God, right? They didn't want to dishonor it anyway. So they didn't add vowels to it. So it was actually YHWH. Well, in order for us to pronounce it, we had to add vowels to it. Because you can't pronounce a word without vowels. So we asked Pat to give us two vowels. And we asked for an A, and we asked for an E. And we put them in, so it's YHWEH, the word Yahweh. So when Jesus says, I am, he's saying Yahweh. In the English, we use the word Jehovah. It means the same thing, the I am. So when you say Jehovah Jireh, you're saying, Lord, you, God is, I am your provider. God, you are my provider, right? Jehovah Jireh. Jehovah Elam, you're my creator. I am your creator. Jehovah Adonai, I am your God. In the Bible, when you see the word Lord, it is capitalized L-O-R-D. It's all caps. Then it's Yahweh. The I am. The I am. Now, I didn't come to give you a Hebrew or Aramaic or Greek or English language today. And I don't want to confuse anybody. But when you look at verse 58, I think it's pretty obvious what Jesus is saying. Jesus answered and said, I tell you the truth, before Abraham was ever born, Yahweh, I am. They knew. It angered them so much that they picked up stones because they're saying, you're saying you are God. Because that's only a name that can be referred to God. And so they picked up stones to try to kill him. But Jesus is talking about that he is the I am. Immediately, I think their thought would have gone to Moses in Exodus. Okay, so you have that verse, Exodus, yes. Couldn't find it in my notes. But it says this, but Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is your name? Then what should I tell them? God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Now you and I, we think I am. Well, what kind of name is that? But God is saying, I am. I am. I am in the present tense. We'll talk about it more in a second. But he says, I am that I am. In other words, I can only define myself. Man cannot define me. And when we try to define God, we get in trouble. When we try to put God in what we want God to be like, or what we think God should be like, which our culture is doing a lot of today, we get ourselves in trouble. Because God says, you cannot define who I am. I define who I am. I am the I am who is the I am, right? That I define myself. I am who I am. But let's just look at this word I am for a moment in the English, the word I. The word I is a personal pronoun. It tells me that God is interested in me, that he personally wants to relate to me. The I is a personal pronoun. God said, I'm not only interested in being the Almighty God way up here, but I'm interested in you and what's going on in your life. I am. It's personal. The am, God is saying, I is in the present tense. It's not in the past tense. It's not I was, but it's I am. That means I do not change. I'm the same God. Yesterday, today, and forever. I am. I do not change. You'll never say this to your friend. Well, you know, in the past, God was really powerful. He was really strong. And man, there were miracles that happened long ago, but I don't know what happened. But he's not that powerful anymore. No. He's the I am. He never changes. It's in the present. I am. And you'll never go, you know, my friend, if we just wait a little bit longer, oh man, God's going to get powerful. You just wait a few more years, a few more 100 years, and God will have 1,000 more angels, maybe 10,000 more angels, and then he'll be really powerful. You just wait and see. One day he's going to be really powerful. No, he's always powerful. He's always God. He doesn't change today or yesterday. He's the same. He's not bound by time. I know this is hard for us to understand because it's hard for me to understand. When you start thinking about it, it just kind of blows my mind. But we live life on a timeline. God lives in four dimensions. Time is not bound by time. The I am is always present. He's always present in the past, present, and future, all at the same time. That's strange, isn't it? That's hard for us to gather. How can you be here and there? But he is. So when God makes a prophecy in the Bible, you can bank 100% it's going to happen because he's already there. He's watching it happen before his very eyes. He's just telling you what he's seeing happen at that moment because he's there in the future. He's here now. He's back there all at once. He is so much bigger than us. He's a spirit. It's mind-boggling at times, isn't it? Which it tells us that God never changes. Kind of jumped ahead of my notes, but one thing is, if you're taking notes, whatever God prophesied or predicted in the future, and we may be waiting to happen, God's not. In other words, God knows the future. Number two, The I am gives us real insight into God's totality. When God says to Moses, I am who I am, he's defining himself. He's saying, I'm the only one who can define me. Number three, the I am exists as an eternal being. He does not change in nature. Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We can't say that about ourselves. We change. If you get my high school yearbook out, there's a note from a girl in that yearbook that says, Lee, I really enjoy being your friend. You're such a good friend. I hope you never change. Love, Susie. That was before Gidget. But that's just one of many girls that commented like that. Lee, I hope you never change. Well, we just had our 40-year high school reunion. I didn't go because I was too chicken. But if I were gone and I would have saw Susie, I would have come up to Susie, Susie, look, I changed. Right? Man, I've gained about 50 pounds more of me than I had in high school. And my hair is gray. And I can no longer play tennis like we used to play tennis back in the day. My awesome serve is no longer there. And what I think about life and how I see life is so much different now than when I was in high school. I've changed. But God doesn't change. God's always the same. He never changes. We change. I know somebody will say, but yeah, but I read in the Bible where God changed his mind. God didn't change. We change. And therefore, the way God dealt with us then had to change. So in Nineveh, God says, I'm going to destroy Nineveh. But then Nineveh repents when Jonah shows up, all white from being inside of the belly of a fish and looking like a ghost with no hair because the acid probably ate all his hair off his body. He was probably white, and we all came and said, repent! Ah! He scared them. You know, they were going to repent right then. What if God did that to him? What is he going to do to us? And they repented right away. And they cried out to God and said, God, forgive us, forgive us, forgive us. And now God says, I've changed my mind. Did God change? No, God didn't change. We changed, or Nineveh changed. Therefore, it changed God's response to them. God doesn't change. God remains the same. When Jesus says, the I am, he's letting us know that he is personal, that he is present, that he is powerful, that he is unchanging. And we'll see that with each statement that he makes. I am the good shepherd, the I am. Don't miss that as we go through the series. As we look at each one, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door or the gate. I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. When you encounter Christ, he will not change, but you will change. And that's my desire. I've heard this, and I don't know who said it, so I can't give them credit, but I've heard this for a long, many years. The I am changes who I am. And it's true. As we encounter Jesus over the next 7 weeks, I hope that we change for the better. I hope the I am changes who we are. And I hope that we trust God more. You know, we say we trust God, but it's really hard to do. We sing about it, that we trust the Lord, but it's really, at times, hard to do. And I'm not sure if many of the followers of Jesus really trust him. I mean, we struggle at times trusting his intentions. his reliability. Anybody had a hard time trusting his timing at times? His ability to know what we really need. We're just reluctant to let go and believe the best and step out and follow Christ. Trust begins with knowing who he is. The more my grandson is around me, the more he will trust me, because the more he will know me, just like my kids did. So if I took, and this may be hard to believe, but at one point in his life, I could pick Christian up and throw him there and catch him, and he would trust me because he got to know me. So that now if I give Christian advice, he will trust my advice, because over the years, thankfully, I never dropped him. Right? He's saying, Dad, talk about something else. I need to move on. I can see that look. Right? But that's how we are with God. Right? The more we get to know him, the more we'll trust him. So the more you get to know he's your bread of life, the more you get to know he's a good shepherd, like we talked about in Psalms 23, the more you get to know he's your resurrection and your life, he can bring back that which was dead and bring it back to life. Oh my. The more you get to know about God, the more you learn you can trust him. Trusting Jesus really begins going all the way back to the cross, where you see Jesus being senselessly murdered for our behalf. It's a divine moment. And that moment when you realize for the first time and you said, Lord, maybe the second time, third time, but you say, Lord, forgive me. That's when you begin to trust him, because you begin that relationship of saying, Lord, I trust you. Creation and everything around us screams out that God is so much bigger than us. But it's at Calvary, it's at the cross, where God shows us his love and says, you can trust me. Discovering that I am changes again who I am. That I can learn that I can trust Jesus. You're probably not going to trust him today because of my message saying that Jesus is all personal, that he's present, that he's powerful, that he's unchanging. You're going to trust him as you get to know him. And trusting God takes time. It takes time. But as you learn to trust him, you will enter into his rest. And that's the goal. May we get into the rest in our life, where life does not, circumstances do not unsettle us, circumstances, situations do not overwhelm us, but we just say, Jesus, you got this. I trust you. It doesn't look good, but Jesus, you got this. You got me. Your goodness, you've been faithful in the past. You'll be faithful again. I choose to trust you. It brings peace. I pray that you'll live out Psalms 23. I know that was a series ago, but man, there's a lot of things that tells about God's goodness. That you'll just trust in God's goodness to you. You'll know that God will take care of it. Even when you don't know how, why, or when it's going to happen, you're just going to trust that God is going to take care of this. You'll just trust that I don't have to try to figure it out. That I don't have to try to be the I am. Because I'm not. That I'm going to let Jesus be the I am. I am the I am not, like I've said before. that I don't have to have the answers. Sometimes, like when I go into a hospital room, didn't happen this time, but like when I go in a hospital room where somebody's been involved in a bad situation, like Joshua, sometimes people say, why did this happen? I don't know. I can't tell you the answers. All I can tell you is trust Jesus. That you have a good God who loves you and will take you through whatever situation you're in. Trust Him. Trust Him. And God can take whatever you're in and turn it into a testimony in a powerful way. Whether He delivers you from it or whether He brings you through it, it becomes a powerful testimony. You say, why do I go through things in life? Why go through valleys? Because God has given you a testimony that you can share. That's your story of God's goodness to you in the middle of the valley. So my prayer, as we go through the next 7 weeks and we learn more about who Jesus is, therefore we learn about more who God is, that we go, you know what? God, I got to trust you more. I got to trust you more and enjoy the rest that you want to give me instead of living in the anxiety and the fear and the stress.